Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent. We welcome you, whoever you are, wherever you come from, and whomever you love. We extend a special welcome to those who are with us for the first time today. We are always glad to have guests at our service. Membership in this church is open to all who agree to walk with us in the free quest of high values in religion and life. If you would like to learn more about Unitarian Universalism in general, or this church in particular, please feel free to ask me or other people wearing printed name tags. On Tuesdays, during the month of August, the membership committee of the church will host new Unitarian Universalist classes. These provide an opportunity to learn more about Unitarian Universalism and about this congregation, with no obligation to join. You are welcome, whether you attend one class or several. This coming Tuesday, the class will meet at the Kent Library at 6:30 in the evening. I hope you will stay after the service to join us downstairs in Fessenden Hall for a time of coffee and conversation. If you prefer a quieter venue, representatives of the membership committee will be in the entryway over here where tea is available, and our church library adjoins that room. Another way to get more information about the life and work of this community is to complete the guest card, which is in the racks on the pews. If you place your completed card in the offering basket or hand it to one of the ushers or someone from the membership committee, you will get more information and be put on the list for our newsletter so you can learn more about the life and work of the church. The Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent is a member of the Unitarian Universalist Association. As a non-creedal church, we affirm that the integrity of love is more important than purity of dogma. Our unity is based on mutual concern, not theological agreement. As a congregation, we protect the life of the spirit and the freedom of the mind. This morning, I am serving as the worship associate. My name is Susan Geckler, and I am a member of the Social Justice Committee of this church. I'm joined in welcoming you this morning by several others: our music director, Hal Walker, the sound technician today, Mac Geckler, Vivian and Anna Sandlin, who will light our chalice, Lee Brooker, who will share a reading, Saunas Parsons, who will talk about what she and her sons do at the Kent Clothing Center on behalf of the Social Justice Committee and the church. Hal, Mac, Vivian, Lee, and Saunas are all members of the church, and all but Hal are members of the Social Justice Committee. Others who join me this morning are church members Ed Stolish, who spends many hours caring for animals as a volunteer for another group, Bobby Beal, a member of the church, whose life's work is with special needs children, and Deb Silverstein, who is a friend of the Social Justice Committee and speaks out as a member of SPAN Ohio on behalf of true health care reform. Our minister, the Reverend Melissa Carvel-Zemer, will be back in the pulpit in 2 weeks. Ours is a church that strives to practice the art of hospitality. So in addition to these people welcoming you formally, we'd like to take a moment now to ask you to welcome those seated around you. In addition to asking you to turn off your cell phones or put them on vibrate, I invite you to take a look at the thread from the web, the insert in your service. There you will find more information about the new U class and several important announcements, as well as a calendar of events for the week upcoming in the church. A few items I'd like to particularly bring to your attention are the Interfaith Sacred Dialogue Conversation on Race that our church will host on August the 21st. Another item is the Question Box Sermon invitation, and then information about Human Rights Watch, which is the recipient of today's special offering. Next week, we will again gather for worship at 10 o'clock. This will be a lay-led service with Lori McGee as the coordinator. At the end of today's service, we will be glad to greet you in the front of the sanctuary. We are glad to have you with us this morning. We hope you find something in the service today that nourishes your spirit and inspires you to act on your beliefs. Once again, I bid you welcome. The people who will share this morning do their work, some of them as part of a church function, some on their own, and some as their life's work. For each one, however, this work is an expression of their faith. Each person here has gifts to share and ways we can contribute. Many people sitting in this room could tell similar stories of work that you do. We invite you to talk to others at coffee hour about your helping hands and loving hearts. If you are seeking ways to expand your helping hand that you extend, you might find inspiration in the insert in your order of service. This lists many opportunities the church offers for making this world a better place. I will note one correction, and that is that Caroline Arnold is now the chair of the committee. As you participate in today's service, I invite you to consider the words of the Dalai Lama when he said, "Responsibility does not only lie with the leaders of our countries or with those who have been appointed or elected to do a particular job. It lies with each of us individually." Come, let us worship together.
This is from The Almost Church, Redefining Unitarian Universalism for a New Era by Michael Durrell. To create an authentic church will require a conviction in our hearts and minds that Unitarian Universalism can change people's lives for the better in some fundamental way. The purpose of a church is not to bring people into the building and cage them in programs. The major purpose of a church is to empower people to go out and make the world a better place in which to live. The purpose of a church is to call people to serve. UU churches should call their members to lead lives of dedication and commitment, lives not just of success, but also of service, and when called upon, sacrifice. Silvio Nardin, a UU minister in California, uses this example. Does your church have clear glass windows through which the congregation looks out onto a world in which sorrow and unhappiness are all too evident? Or are those windows more like mirrors, reflecting only the comfort, convenience, and needs of parishioners inside? Can people passing by see in through those windows, or are those windows opaque to an outsider's point of view? Unitarian Universalism should be creating churches that make the world a more quiet, just, safe, and equitable place. The goals will not be accomplished if we believe the primary role is to accommodate the people who are already here. I invite you now to quiet yourself and spend a few moments in silence, reflecting on what you hear, setting aside everyday concerns, and opening yourself to what you find here.
Each week, when we gather for worship, we set aside time to widen the caring ministry of this congregation. We take time to memorialize those who have died, to celebrate with those who are joyous, and to call into this community of care all who are need our love and support. Since we last met for worship, some have had reason to celebrate, such as Kim and John Murphy, who are celebrating their 20th anniversary on the 11th, and Mac and I, who celebrated our 14th anniversary on Thursday. Among those who need our love and support is Kay Wind, who was hospitalized this week with a possible minor stroke. Let us give thanks also for the contributions of Diana Van Winkle, who is completing her service as Director of Religious Education with our church today. Please join me now in the spirit of prayer with these words from Suzanne Meyer. We gather today not because we expect to find answers here, but rather because we expect to be encouraged in our questioning. We gather today not because we expect to find perfect people here, but rather we hope to find authentic people here. We gather today not because we are certain in our own righteousness, but because we are continually searching for the right, the good, the uplifting. We gather today not because we seek absolution for our sins and failures, but rather because we acknowledge our imperfections and seek the courage to make amends for those failures to ourselves and others. We gather today not because we need to be told what to believe and how to act, but rather because we need each other's encouragement to act according to our own best beliefs. We gather today not because we are hoping to find God in a scripture or a ritual, but rather because we are hoping to discover the divinity within our own hearts and within the hearts of others. We gather today not because we believe that holiness exists within these walls alone, but rather to have our hearts and minds directed to the holiness in the world. For all of these reasons, we gather together. Amen. So be it. Blessed be.
One of the ways that I try to make a difference in my community is by spending a few hours a month at the County Clothing Center, also known as the CCC. About 400 volunteers like me donate their time there, allowing this agency to do quite a bit with just a little money and with only one paid staff member to oversee the entire agency. For those who don't know, the County Clothing Center's main objective is to reduce the amount of usable stuff that ends up in the landfill and to make it available free of charge to people who can use it, which averages about 3,500 people a month. The CCC receives and processes an astonishing mountain of usable clothing and household goods, Last year alone, they processed over 230 tons of clothing and other goods. Volunteers sort and process the donations, hang clothing, and keep the racks stocked. All of the clothing is available to anyone who walks in and wants it. It's not uncommon to find people looking for clothes for a job interview or a special event. Families come in looking for school clothes for their children or clothing for new infants. Some enterprising individuals come in and look for clothing that might be sold for a few dollars to augment their income. Then there are people like me who have changed sizes once or twice and aren't squeamish about wearing other people's cast-offs. Clothing isn't the only stuff available at the County Clothing Center, in spite of the name. All kinds of household goods are also available, including furniture, towels and sheets, baby furniture, bicycles and toys, toiletries, disposable diapers, and adult incontinence undergarments. People can also get some specialized equipment that can help them with a disability, like a wheelchair or a shower chair. So why do I volunteer my time to work there? Well, for starters, I do it because somebody asked me to. Carolyn Arnold told me about the mission and said that the agency needed volunteers. She was hoping to support a cause she believes in, and she wanted to help our church become more visible in the community. Other churches have contingents of volunteers from their congregations who come and work regular shifts. People had asked her where we were. Why weren't you used working there with others in the community to keep this agency going? I decided to volunteer so my church would be visible in our community too. When others there are in conversation about their faith communities, I want mine to be represented. When community organizers talk about effective agents in the community, I want the UU Church of Kent to be among those that are mentioned. Another reason I volunteer there is that I get to walk the walk that goes with talking the talk that I talk. I feel that part of living my faith is to take action to support those things that reflect my values. Reduce, reuse, and recycle has long been one of my mantras. I have driven a lot of people nuts, I freely admit it. At one of my jobs, I developed such a reputation for retrieving aluminum cans out of the office trash cans that once when I was gone on vacation, my coworkers built a giant mountain of used aluminum cans on my desk. I was glad because it meant at least they hadn't thrown them away. So working at the CCC allows me to treat the earth more gently, and this supports the seventh principle, which you all know is to have respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are part. My sons volunteer there as well. They may not be as wild about it as I am, but it has been a valuable experience all the same. At the County Clothing Center, they come into contact with all kinds of people they wouldn't otherwise meet. They have seen firsthand the kinds of people who need such services, and they have learned to treat each of these people with courtesy and respect, making use of our first principle, to affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person. They have seen people making the best way they can through hard times, and I hope that is a lesson they never forget. My sons are also learning important lessons about the need for everyone to give back to their community too, and my hope is that this experience will reinforce that idea. Working at the County Clothing Center is great for another reason. It's really easy. I don't have to think. I can visit while I work, so sometimes I get to spend time with people from my own community or my family, or I get to meet new people. And it works into my schedule easily, too. Plus, and here's a big perk, if I find something great that I can use, I get first dibs. The last major reason I do this work is that I actually enjoy volunteering at the County Clothing Center. It makes me happy to see people leave with things they need and can use, especially when I know it could just as easily have ended up in the dump. I like having a place where I can donate items so they can be used. Plus, it just feels good to help other people. It gives me a little helper high. So those are the reasons I volunteer for the County Clothing Center. Is it important work? Well, I think so, and I hope you do too. But more important for me is that I know I'm supporting a larger community. I'm doing my part, making positive ripples in the pool of society. I'm a force for good. I urge you to look around you and see how you can jump in and be a force for good in our larger community, too. Thank you.
That's all right. The greatness of a nation and its moral progress can be judged by the way its animals are treated. This is a quote from Gandhi. My name is Ed Stolish. At the Portage Animal Protective League, I am known as Ed the Dog Walker. I'm the guy with the big hat who exercises dogs in the early morning hours and on Tuesdays when the PAPL is closed to the public. I've walked, sometimes hurriedly, over 3,000 miles of trails accompanied by dogs of all ages, breed, and temperament, year-round since December of 2001. Mary Edelman tells us, service are the dues we pay for living. Volunteering is how I justify the use of the Earth's oxygen. I have taught survival English at the International Institute in Youngstown to Asian refugees who were victimized by the Vietnam War. I've also taken wheelchair-bound adolescents and young adults swimming in the hydrotherapy pool at the Hetty Laurelham Foundation as a volunteer, among other things. The mission of the Portage Animal Protective League is to shelter and find safe homes for sick, injured, abused, and abandoned animals in need of help, as well as to uphold and enforce all the animal cruelty laws. Feel free to pick up information and bookmarkers. Take more than one. I don't know of any Unitarian Universalists who have enough bookmarkers outside. If there's information, help yourself at the table. The PAPL, I'm just going to call them the APL. We cover Portage County, but we also cover parts of Summit County as well. Usually rescues dogs and cats. But during my 8 years of volunteering, I've witnessed the rescue of pigs, sheep, ferrets, horses, rabbits, and a rooster, which was being used as a football by sadistic teenagers. After witnessing the effects of abuse and neglect on defenseless animals over the years, I have often found myself quoting Ashley Montague. The indifference and contempt that so many people exhibit towards animals is evil. First, because it results in great suffering in animals, and second, because it results in incalculably great impoverishment of the human spirit. In my heart, I believe that kindness trumps cruelty. An amazing organization is Rose's Rescue, a local rescue group that selects APL dogs for their cell dog program. Inmates at Trumbull County Correctional Institute research the breed of each dog sent to it and work with the knowledge of this to teach the basic skills needed to make a great addition to some family. Hundreds of dogs and many inmates have learned to work together, building trust and self-esteem. Another special group is the Happy Trails Animal Sanctuary on New Milford Road, which rescues abused and neglected farm animals. A book that forever changed me was The Pig Who Sang to the Moon, The Emotional World of Farm Animals by Jeffrey Musaif Masson. I feel that animals who give up their lives so that we can dine on their flesh should be treated in a humane and compassionate manner. The Animal Protective League, a private no-kill shelter, is dependent on private contributions to survive. It exists due to the generosity and kindness of others. At this point, I would like to say thank you to the congregation and friends who generously contributed to the PAPL in July. These have been tough times for the APL financially, and your donations are greatly appreciated. They will be put to good use. I was asked by the Social Justice Committee to speak to our seventh principle, respect for the interdependent web of existence of which we are all a part. This seemed like a good fit for me, since I consider myself an environmentalist, preservationist, animal advocate, and sometimes transcendentalist. I hike, fly fish, camp out. To me, being called a tree hugger is a compliment. But sometimes I feel like an anomaly. Richard Louv argues in his book, Last Child in the Woods, that baby boomers may constitute the last generation of Americans to share an intimate, familial attachment to the land and water. He quotes Paul, a fourth grader, who claims that he likes to play indoors better because that's where all the electrical outlets are. If Love is correct, how did we arrive at this stage? Part of historian Frederick Jackson Turner's controversial frontier thesis argued that pioneering, the three-century-long westward expansion that settled this continent, altered some behavior patterns. Plentiful resources made men wasteful and scornful of conservation. The cultural relativist in me finds this explanation reasonable, but I also get to draw on my liberal arts background. The real paradox lies in the fact that we distinguish between our world and the natural world. To me, they are both the same. It seems to me that we ignore the everyday marvels which occur outside our circumscribed existence. For example, walking my dog Danny on West Main Street in Kent, I notice plants and tree seedlings growing out of the cracks in the sidewalk. I am reminded of the tenaciousness of life. Last winter, during a severe snowstorm, I observed black-capped chickadees take turns at my bird feeder. Each one took no more than a couple of seconds in order that the whole flock could survive. I once dealt with depression by hand-feeding chickadees. I found grace in that act. One world, a truce, a trust. Respectful of all life, I am especially fond of dogs and can't imagine life without one. Every dog that has shared its life with my family over the years has come from a shelter or a rescue. While in college, a dog curled at my feet as I crammed all night for exams. A dog worked the crowd for treats and attention at my daughter's birthday parties. A dog accompanied me on a gray winter day as I pondered the death of a close friend. A dog named Conway, who's on one of the bookmarkers out there, gave me one of the best Christmas gifts I've ever received. Before his surgery and eventual adoption, he served as a therapy dog at a local nursing home complex. Conway became many different dogs that December afternoon. I'll give you some expressions that were used, or words that were said. A dog we used to have on the farm, a big old collie named Gus, sure looks a lot like him. One day, Brownie just showed up at our door. I guess you could say she adopted us. Times were tough, but that dog went hungry with the rest of us. In the Alzheimer's unit, which was locked down to keep the residents from wandering off, someone wished us a Merry Christmas. "Please come back soon," they said, as we left and the electronic doors locked shut behind us. "And don't forget to bring your dog." I like dogs for some of the same reasons as other people do. They are emotionally honest. That is, their feelings are genuine. There is no mistaking whether a dog likes you or not. Dogs seem to live in the moment, maximizing joy. They accept you for who you are, unconditionally. Did you ever wonder why some chained dogs bark at night? Consider Robert Frost's poem, Canis Major. Astronomers and stargazers among you will recognize Canis Major, which means great dog in Latin, constellation, as including Sirius, which is the dog star, which is the one eye in this poem. I think about this poem sometimes when I see a dog chained outside, isolated and alone. The great overdog, that heavenly beast, with a star in one eye, gives a leap in the east. He dances upright all the way to the west and never once props on his 4 feet to rest. I'm a poor underdog, but tonight I will bark with the great overdog that romps through the dark. The reason I walk dogs at the APL is to gain their trust and help socialize them, thereby making them more adoptable. It is a great feeling when you win their trust, especially after they have been neglected or abused. Pardon the pun. To err is human, to forgive canine. Dogs like us are sentient beings with emotional needs. Taking a dog for a walk may seem like an insignificant act in the grand scheme of things, but to that dog being walked, it's of the greatest importance. Remember that no kind act is small and may well be contagious. If enough of us began walking dogs, we could possibly end up being kinder to one another. This is A Prayer for Animals by the great humanitarian Albert Schweitzer. Hear our humble prayer for our friends, the animals, especially for animals who are suffering, for any that are hunted or lost or deserted or frightened or hungry, for all that must be put to death. We entreat for them all thy mercy and pity. And for those who deal with them, we ask a heart of compassion and gentle hands and kindly words. Make us ourselves to be true friends to the animals and so share the blessings of the merciful.
Good morning, and thank you for inviting me to come this morning. Several years ago, while visiting my sister living in France, I was injured and had to visit in an emergency room in Paris. When I arrived, I was not questioned about whether or not I had insurance or how I would pay, but rather what my injury was. I was immediately assured that I would receive care. I was cared for in a very courteous, professional, and efficient manner. When I was ready to leave, I asked how I should pay for the services I had received, and I was told that I didn't. I explained that I was not a citizen of France and not covered under their health care system, but they said that I was covered as I was a human being in need of medical attention. What would our world be like if we first looked at each other as human beings rather than as the categories and labels we so often like to assign? 276 Americans will die preventable deaths today from diseases and conditions that could have been treated with better outcomes. The United States has one of the highest preventable death rates in the industrialized world, and much of that cause can be found in the lack of a health care system that is accessible to all. Many of those deaths could be avoided if we had a true health care system rather than a health care industry. Knowing this fact, and knowing that there is a solution, I would feel culpable in those deaths if I failed to speak up. In the time I've spent working for a single-payer system, I've met many people who have been driven into bankruptcy by medical bills. One gentleman, a self-employed businessman who lived in Ravenna, had lost his home, his business, and his entire life savings. He was left with $250,000 in medical debt and was facing eviction from his apartment. Another, a social worker employed by the Diocese of Youngstown, who worked in an adult outreach program, had insurance when he became ill. He was financially devastated by his illness and now lives in subsidized housing and has become one of his own clients. Another, a woman who was a former federal employee and who now lives in Kent, was diagnosed with colon cancer. She didn't qualify for Medicare or Medicaid because she had $1,000 too much in assets, based on the expected sale of her recently deceased mother's home. She was left with over $200,000 in medical debt and filed bankruptcy. A man from Akron was injured on the job and retired under Social Security disability. He was not yet qualified for Medicare when he was diagnosed with cancer. Unable to afford the $17,000 per month in treatments, he died. Healthcare is a human right. The human right to healthcare requires that doctors, hospitals, clinics, and drugs not just be available to everyone, but be accessible to all, available in all areas, and appropriate to needs. Healthcare must be financed and delivered in a non-discriminatory way that enables the participation of all individuals and communities, provides access to information, ensures transparency, and has effective mechanisms in place to hold both the public and private sector accountable. The only proposal for healthcare that meets these requirements is a single-payer system. Single-payer plans treat healthcare as an essential service and for the public good. An expanded and improved system of Medicare for All would remove all financial barriers to the access of healthcare, preserve the choice of doctors and hospitals, and return the authority to determine proper treatment to the patients and their physicians. Believing in the worth and dignity of every person and justice in all forms for everyone, I cannot condone a healthcare system that puts profits over the lives of people, or one that excludes individuals because of their financial status, their employment status, or their pre-existing conditions. I cannot condone a system that puts people's lives in jeopardy or risks their financial ruin because they were unfortunate enough to become ill, as we all will someday. While there are many financial arguments for a single-payer system, the moral argument is the one that speaks to me the most. How can I look at another person and tell them they are not worthy to fully access health care when needed? My aunt was a missionary in Papua New Guinea for 35 years. We did not agree on all aspects of religion. Rather, we generally disagreed on most of them. But her experience there taught her a valuable lesson that impressed me deeply. She said that shortly after arriving in Papua New Guinea, she realized that she had to first take care of the physical needs of the people before she could provide for their spiritual needs. When we fail to provide for the health needs of all, we prevent them from realizing their full potential as human beings. Jesus healed everyone, regardless of pre-existing conditions. In order to raise my voice for those who are unprotected by our healthcare industry in this country, I have become active in the Single Payer Action Network of Ohio. I serve as the regional coordinator for Region 6, which includes Portage County and 12 other counties. SPAN is composed of volunteers from the medical community, the labor community, the faith-based community, and interested individuals such as me. I go out and give talks such as this one in order to educate as many as possible to the best solution for our healthcare crisis. I also circulate petitions to put the Health Care for All Ohioans Act on the ballot. I have traveled to Washington, D.C. and Columbus to attend rallies and demonstrations in support of single payer. I lobby and educate our elected officials. I recruit new groups of activists and help organize them. I am willing to risk arrest, if necessary, to obtain what I consider to be a human right. During the time that I have been speaking, one person died a preventable death.
Good morning. Last Monday, I greeted 19 kids and welcomed them to Adventure Camp. We would be spending the week together doing many of the typical camp activities that millions of kids have enjoyed for endless summers: swimming, hiking, crafts, campfires, even service projects. Except these kids aren't typical. These are the kids with emotional and behavioral problems, severe problems that interfere with their ability to function well. Let me introduce you to a few of them. Leanne, so impulsive that she can't listen to a simple direction or stay seated in a chair for more than 3 minutes. TJ, oppositional. He argues with everyone about everything, is isolated and confused about why he has no friends. And Brian, who is so angry and explosive that he can't look me in the eye or speak clearly enough to be understood, mumbling his responses with his hat pulled low over his face. These are the kids who get kicked out of the other camps, the other groups, the other schools. I'm a clinical psychologist in a community mental health center in Canton, Ohio. I intentionally got a PsyD, a doctorate in psychology, rather than the more popular PhD, so that I could avoid doing research and focus on a more clinical practice. And this strategy served me well for the first decade of my career. I started as an intensive home-based therapist, working on stabilizing families in their homes to avoid child removal for abuse or neglect. After several years in the field, I began designing and implementing programs for families and kids who needed skills, support, and services to help them overcome the difficulties of living with mental illness. I was introduced to AEE, the Association for Experiential Education, in the mid-90s. Looking back, I see many parallels between my two favorite communities, AEE and the Kent UU Church. Earlier today, Lee read, "The major purpose of church is to empower people to go out and make the world a better place in which to live." AEE's vision is to make a more just and compassionate world by transforming education. Our church supports an active social justice committee, and many members work or volunteer at a variety of local nonprofit agencies. One of my favorite AEE conference t-shirts quotes Herbert Spencer, "The great aim of education is not knowledge, but action." And one more example of that alignment between AEE and the UUs, I'm welcome to attend either, wearing whatever I like. Through AEE, I was able to put a framework around the therapy that I was doing and promoting. I developed presentations for my staff and colleagues based on things that I learned at the conferences each year, and I shared my practices and my passion for adventure therapy work with whomever would listen. I know that all kids, all people, really, learn best when we approach them with love and respect, offer them support and safety as they struggle to grasp new concepts. I also know that getting them out into the natural world is curative. I'm intentional about my work and passionate about taking kids camping and backpacking. Throughout the 90s, I built a thriving adventure therapy department at the organization where I work. This excellent organization supports my passion to find creative ways to serve kids and their families. In 2005, we were serving over 200 kids per week in adventure therapy and other experiential groups, workshops, and camps. The staff felt efficient and effective, and the kids loved the activities, a winning combination. Unfortunately, several years ago, at CNA, we began to sense a change in political and thus financial concerns. At first, we were simply asked to support or justify our services. We scrambled around collecting theories and current journal articles to demonstrate that we had good reason to provide the services that we did. Then we were asked to select program models that had significant research support and were on federally approved lists. Occasionally, we found some programs that were incredibly familiar to us. We were actually providing the same service that was being promoted. However, we did not have a massive research project behind our work to prove that we were being effective. Model programs come with a hefty price tag. It's not unusual for an organization to pay thousands of dollars to implement a single cycle of an evidence-based program. In Ohio, the Department of Mental Health hasn't seen an increase in reimbursement rates for over a decade. For an overburdened system to afford expensive programs, we would have to discontinue other programs. Unfortunately, canceling less expensive local programming for purchased model programs often results in less clients served. The Adventure Plus program at CNA suffered a dramatic reduction in funding. With more and more funds being diverted to purchase model or evidence-based programs, we were no longer able to provide transportation to any group or workshop participant. Approximately 50% of our client base could suddenly not access service. Of course, this problem is not exclusive to the world of therapy or mental health. We're all aware of the myriad problems facing our public and private education systems as well. I now meet annually with a dedicated group from AEE to discuss the state of our field and further explore ideas about how to validate and protect our work. We are passionate about adventure programming and very concerned about our future opportunities and responsibilities. So as someone who avoided anything research-related for decades, outside of the occasional journal article, I found myself approaching the third decade of my career on an entirely unforeseen path. Instead of comfortably filling the roles of cool camp director, supportive supervisor, and compassionate therapist, I felt compelled to add a new role. I am now in the far less comfortable role of research-savvy political activist, to ensure that children and families burdened with mental illness can receive the services they need to be successful in their lives. Finally, I can tell you one more thing. I'd rather be camping with Leanne, TJ, and Brian than doing research in politics. On Friday, as I waved goodbye to my 19 kids, I was amazed again and again at their resiliency. Leanne will probably always need medicine to help calm her down, but she was able to hear most, or at least some, of our instructions as she bounced up and down in our large therapy balls. TJ was immensely proud of the fact that he had earned campfire snack every night for eating the fruits and vegetables at meals that he had initially refused to try. And Brian, well, he looked me in the eye and asked if I'd like a copy of the song that he wrote this week. Don't be a butthead, try to be nice, and everything will be okay.
At this point, I'll invite the ushers to come forward. Some causes, especially those that require broad social change or intervention, require more than the time or talents of individuals. Two years ago, this congregation decided to collect a special offering once each month. The Social Justice Committee recommends a charity seeking to balance local and more national or international needs. This month, concerned about the rights of immigrants and refugees, the Social Justice Committee selected Human Rights Watch as the recipient. Its work supports our principles of respecting the inherent worth and dignity of all people and of justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. You can find more information about its work in the thread from the web, the insert in your order of service. As the ushers pass the baskets, you have the opportunity to help with that work by making a contribution, putting your gift in an envelope found in the back of the pews and indicating special offering. If you write a check, please write it out to Human Rights Watch. As the ushers pass the offering basket, please take the basket in your hands and contemplate your contributions toward making the world a better place. Please do this whether or not you make a financial contribution. If you are a visitor in the church today, there is a gift for you. Please take a candle from the basket and keep it as a token from us. The offering will now be given and received in appreciation for our shared dreams of a better world.
You'll find hope in this broken world if you're willing, time to open. You'll know peace in this wretched world. Have a little mercy on my soul, friend. Reach out, connect, guide and set. Lend your hands to push and sweat. Roll away the stone and brick. Help your friends and they'll help you back. You'll hear love knocking at your door if you make time to hold a hand. Just be real in this lonesome world. Gotta make holy every turn of the wheel. Reach out, connect, guide and set. Lend your hands to push and sweat. Roll away the stone and brick. Help your friends and they'll help you back. You'll stay true to your mom and dad if you keep loving them, even when they're bad. You can't go wrong in this tempting world if you stay slow, if you walk real close. Reach out, connect, guide and set. Lend your hands to push and sweat. Roll away the stone and brick. Help your friends and they'll help you back. You'll find hope in this broken world if you're willing, time to open.
I leave you with these words from Edward Everett Hale. I am only one, but still I am one. I cannot do everything, but I can still do something. And because I cannot do everything, I will not refuse to do the something that I can do. Amen.